Live from the Ghost Hunter Store. Brought to you by the Shadowlands, South Jersey Ghost Research, and the Ghost Hunter Store. Here's some paranormal straight talk with your hosts, Dave Giuliano and Marty Haynes.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show that I wasn't supposed to be on today. I'm not supposed to be here today. Welcome to Paranormal Straight Talk. Marty's not with me. Luckily, Leslie and Kim are. And I was going to get to him. He gets a special announcement. Because of the London Olympics being so, held right now, we have a special guest that's flown all the way in from what part of Jersey?
Edgewater Park.
Flown in, I mean, by speeding.
Absolutely.
We needed someone with an English accent on here today. But we were supposed to have a guest with us. I don't know if it's my Skype knowledge, as most of you know who listen to this. I do know a lot about computers, and I do know stuff about the internet, but I can't get this stuff to work. So I don't know if it's on his end, because it's like 11 o'clock there over in Scotland, or maybe he's watching the Olympics, or I don't know if he'll still be going that late. Who knows? I don't know. We can't connect to him. And right now I'm just rambling on because we're still trying to come up with an idea what the show is going to actually be about. So this is the plan for, you hear that? This was the script for today. We don't need that anymore. So this is another, I guess, unofficial roundtable. Actually, don't even need the headphones anymore because this makes everything really loud. So, Kim, tell us about your aunt's story, because you were just telling us before. Maybe we can segue off of that.
Well, it was actually an interesting topic. She had been explaining to me that she is atheist. And I got on the subject that I did paranormal investigating, and actually was interested in paranormal across the board. And she said, well, I don't believe in a higher power. And I was curious about it. And I had asked her, because I know she had lived in Colorado before she moved to Connecticut. And in Colorado, she was heavily into the Native American culture, and I asked about that. And she pretty much still did not believe in a higher power, believed more in an exchange of energies. And I guess that tells me, or brings so many questions to me right now about exactly what is an atheist? Who considers themselves an atheist, and why do they consider themselves an atheist?
I think it's like almost one of those names people slap on. Like agnostic to, or even people who say they're not into organized religion. But what do you mean by organized religion? I think if you took a poll and you asked people who said they're not into organized religion, probably I'm willing to go up to 80% or higher would probably be people who were disenfranchised Roman Catholics. And that's what they're talking about, organized religion. And that's not what, so anything that you use the word religion in, now has a bad connotation to them. That's the people who are agnostic. We had a client that says she's agnostic, but she watches the religion shows, and she watches Mass on TV because of her schedule every Sunday. Well, that's not my definition of agnostic, then. Or I think that's not the general. Agnostics like just the notch above atheists, really. Agnostics believe there's something, right? But they don't believe in anything.
Nothing defined, exactly.
Mm-hmm. A universal energy at best,
exactly.
If anything.
Right.
But like, the atheist is no God, right?
Yeah, I think you're correct. I think people take it to all different extremes, and some people, some people are they don't believe in anything, period. And I think they get very threatened by things, so they're just like done with that. But I think some people, when they don't want to subscribe to any type of structured religion, yes, they have. But it's interesting how many atheist people I've met that turned out to be some of the most spiritual people you'd ever want to meet, but they don't define themselves. They're not comfortable defining themselves as such. So maybe it's more of a semantics kind of thing with the terms and stuff like that. So,
but I wonder, what would push somebody to say, well, I'm an atheist. I believe in nothing. Yet
you look around you and the creation of everything, creation of like a human alone is enough to just kind of blow my mind a little bit. How could anybody, and I'm a very open-minded person, yeah, I'm open-minded enough to see how somebody would not want to believe in something. But how could you not believe in so many things that happen from a single cell? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's my, I would love to talk to like people who say they're atheists and people who say they're agnostic, and then people who say they don't like organized religion. I'd like to have them all together and really throw so many questions at them,
mm-hmm,
about where you're coming from.
Can we take calls? No.
And we don't have the Skype thing's not working, we would be able to take calls, but I just put it out there to the people who are in the chat room that they could, if they had any questions, feel free to jump in. But I wonder if there is a spot, because I think it really depends on the religion or the point of view you're coming from. What, like, I was taught atheists didn't believe in God,
mm-hmm,
but that still leaves open other, the atheist, I mean, I can't remember the Maureen O'Hare, the lady that went missing, though she was the famous atheist in the 1970s.
Yeah.
I probably got her name wrong. But she was like very activist atheist. But her rant was against there is no God. But does that mean there are no higher beings whatsoever, or there's no universal energy out there? I mean, there's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I never really sat down and talked to an atheist. I guess because of my religion coming from my belief system, atheists meant they were like anti-God, but that may not be true. So I guess it's kind of like, it's not one of those categories of organized religion, really. What
yeah,
is organized
exactly.
religion? Does organized religion mean that, you know, you were a disenfranchised Roman Catholic, or you didn't like to go to Sunday school, or you didn't like the, you know, that you had to, they passed around the plate, you know, and that could, it's not just be Roman Catholics, I mean, other churches do that too. What part of the organization or organizing part didn't you like? Because it was enough to say that you've turned away from your belief system a little bit because of the man-made stuff, not the religion. And people don't necessarily see that. Because we see that on the questionnaires a lot. Well, I'm religious, but or I believe in something, but I'm not organized religion. And they always go out of their way to say organized religion. So it's a difficult thing to like kind of pry that belief system out of them then. Because we've talked about this before, how people's beliefs affect how you're going to help them on an investigation, or if they're having problems in their home, you kind of have to know what background they're from. And if they're not really sure and they're hitting you with the, I don't believe in anything, I'm not into organized religion, and then you start talking to them where you see like there's crucifixes on the wall, or,
mm-hmm,
you know, they're wearing a Star of David or whatever it happens to be, it's like, well, what is that? Was costume jewelry, or, you know, it's been hanging there so long you didn't want to take it down? So I think it's a total misconception of just all the labels.
And so, also, how can you be an atheist? I mean, well, I don't see how you can be an atheist, because, yes, you can be an atheist. It's, you know, everybody's prerogative to be what they want to be. But do atheists believe in ghosts? Do they believe in the paranormal? Do they believe in other dimensions? You know, are all so many questions I have. Because we have had people who said they are atheists who are having problems in their home.
Right.
But then there's a disconnect. Because if you don't believe that exists, why are you acknowledging it?
And I think a lot of times, a lot of famous scientists, or even Einstein, you know,
mm-hmm,
used to talk about, not necessarily religious, you know, saying, okay, but he would talk about, you know, a higher power. You know, like something bigger than that we know. So I think it's interesting that even Einstein would acknowledge that there, what you were talking about before, that there's this kind of spark of divine nature there that's part of everything. And I think that I would say most of the people that I've talked to, even though they claim to be atheists and stuff like that, they kind of would subscribe to that because they have borders on science. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
mm-hmm,
kind of like the more we learn about quantum physics string theories and all these different things, it kind of supports a little bit more of this kind of like divine, you know, this like larger than life structure that's set up, and then it brings you back to, okay, well, where did that come from? You know, so it makes them question things. I think the more scientific discoveries we make, I think the more and more, I think atheists are going to start to kind of be like, no, wait a minute, you know, I can't argue with that because that's been scientifically proven, that kind of thing.
Especially with the energy is either created or destroyed subject. And I know many For instance, my aunt says she does believe in the exchange of energies. And, you know, pressing her further, she kind of shut me down a little bit, which was fine, because maybe I was getting to that point where she was going to begin questioning it. She did not want to. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe there is something. They just don't want to question it. They don't want to know.
Isn't that much aligned, though, with somebody who is deeply religious, who in turn does not necessarily feel comfortable or being challenged or questioned about the
yes.
core parts of their faith and their belief structure to the point where they can become very, very withdrawn in the conversation and start asking those particular questions.
Speaking of Einstein, now we're thinking of the guy who invented the theory of relativity, things that science would use now almost to disprove God in a way. Here's some, I just found some quotes here. Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. There remains something subtle, intangible, and inexplicable. Veneration for this force beyond anything that we can comprehend is my religion. Human beings, vegetables, or cosmic dust, we all dance in a mysterious trance intoned in the distance by an invisible player. It sounds like he believes that there's something else out there. And there's many more where he refers to the good Lord and other things. Although, does he believe in immortality? He says, no, one life is enough for me. But that sounds like that's a sarcastic joking answer. But, I mean, there's he also is about fate. There's I do not believe the good Lord plays dice. Nothing happens by chance, pretty much, as we say. Everything is predetermined. But that sounds like a pretty basic, fundamental, almost Christian or Judeo-Christian, Islamic, you know, Protestant, you know, I mean, it goes across the board. That's a basic belief system there from someone who kind of turned religion on its head by some of the theories because people can't put two and two together. People can't see the Big Bang and Genesis when the Big Bang is what Genesis looked like.
It's
if
so
you were watching
related.
It. Right.
It is amazing.
To me, there was never any difference. There was never any competition between the two.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that as time goes by, and I think this is all, we're talking about fear-based stuff here, too. And I'm thinking as time goes by, and I think more people are, I think they're starting to be a little bit more aware, a little bit more open with things. And I think we just need to keep, whenever there's a certain topic that might evoke fear, that we need to demystify more. And that's what I'd like to do that with people. When I'm having a conversation about something, let's say about, ghosts or this or that, you find that there's a lot of misconception, there's a lot of fear. And I think fear tends to really kind of limit people's, sense of understanding and they're just, kind of all, afraid to be open to things, and I think the more like shows like this and other shows, I think it's great because they demystify things and they get that stuff out there. And I think even Einstein, it's funny you read those quotes. I didn't even realize he touched on religious stuff so exclusively. But
I remember reading somewhere. I don't know how I came across it. Might be in some like my classes for the seminary. I think it was religious philosophy. Actually, there was a lot of philosophers and scientists, especially that you would think that would. Like Einstein would never have been someone either that I would even thought remotely would have approached the subject or would have given some sort of strictly clinical scientific answer, but he doesn't. He goes the total opposite way. You're going to hear like some sound in the background too. We have someone outside the store right now with their music blasting, so it's like I guess it's giving us a nice background sound. But I'm sure these mics are picking it up.
Yeah, the music doesn't exactly go with the topic, but we'll have to work with that.
See, now what, like, here, this is just from dictionary.com, okay? Synonyms with atheist is agnostic, infidel, and skeptic.
Oh, that's a wide range.
That's interesting.
We were just talking about agnostic being something different. Refers to a person not inclined towards a religious belief or a particular form of religious belief. An atheist is one who defines the existence of a deity or of divine beings. Who denies the existence, I'm sorry. So he's saying of a deity or divine beings. Agnostic is one who believes it is impossible to know anything about God, about the creation of the universe, and refrains from committing to any religious doctrine. An infidel means an unbeliever, especially a non-believer in Islam or Christianity. A skeptic doubts and is critical of all accepted doctrines and beliefs. So they're put synonyms because they're so close. But I mean, to me, they're still worlds apart. That's still huge gaps. Like the atheist is strictly to a divine being, or divine beings, plural. So that means he couldn't, Parthenon is going to be something he didn't believe in just as much as he doesn't believe in going to the church, because it rules out all the divine beings.
And are people born this way, or do they become atheists because of some things that have happened in their lives? And please don't get me wrong. If you walk up to me and say, I'm an atheist, I'm not going to judge you, because that is your, view on life. I'm very curious.
That's because you've already judged them before they even started walking toward you.
No, that's because they have the big A in the T-shirt.
with the circles with the thing.
There you go.
But no, it's more of a curiosity because I do truly believe in a higher power, a divine power, and I do believe that my brain cannot wrap itself around truly what that is. And perhaps then that's why I question, not in a judgmental way, but I'm questioning, if my brain can't wrap around it, perhaps your brain can't wrap around it. Maybe that's why you are having a hard time believing it.
Well, because almost all religion is basically just something that's you're taking on faith. Mm-hmm. There's very little of the organized religions that you're going to get the physical proof required to show exactly what you need. I mean, as an individual, I'm sure. You've been you were a practicing Wiccan, at some point.
I'm very eclectic. Yes, I don't label myself as such, but yes, I still do perform certain rituals and stuff like that.
So does the goddess manifest for you in a way that you can physically see, or is it more of a spiritual way?
Well, that depends upon how much you drink beforehand. I think for me, when I did ritual and stuff like that. No, I never actually saw the goddess, but I tend to, if I was, let's say, doing a full moon ritual, and I was outside and everything, and you saw the moon, how pretty it was, and the breeze, and it's just, it's more like you feel everything around you is the goddess. It is one. It's all source. And that, to me, was how I would connect with God form. I'm sure I've read some people who definitely have done different type of magical rituals there, and they have actually seen things. For me, no, but it didn't make it any less powerful or, by not actually having, again, it comes back down to faith, just like any type of religious system. And, I think there's a quote, they say, seeing is not believing, believing is seeing.
See, I think that's a good quote, by the way, but that's kind of the point of it. It's all of it's faith-based. Internally, because it's what you're feeling. Unless it's some mass thing, like Fatima, where hundreds of people see the sun dance in the sky, or some huge event like that.
Elvis in your omelet.
Elvis in your omelet, or in your toast, or in the side of a tree.
Yeah, that's true.
But anything that's, you may have a whole congregation of people all together in a worship service of any kind, and each person is experiencing something unique to them that draws them there. It's a common experience, but it's
personal.
A personal experience. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It's very personal. Yeah.
So that's what the atheist agnostic, exactly, how do they get, how do they get there? What do they become atheist as a rebel? Is that the ultimate rebellion against organized religion? the way to fight back? Is it, you've seen this too, even though I'm going to pick on the Wiccans, I guess. I usually pick on the Catholics, so I'm giving the Catholics a break this week. So I'm equal opportunity picking on, but using as an example, how many people have we seen just through coming through the group, or just in our general lives that they either say they're Wiccan or my favorite is they're witches.
Okay.
And that's normally when someone initially comes up to me and tells me they're a witch, other than Christine O'Donnell from Delaware went, I'm not a witch, on her whole campaign commercial and all that. Sorry, threw politics in there. But when people come and say they're witches, that to me, that means they went to Barnes & Noble, bought a book, they read a book, and now they're witches.
Well, that's because there's about 8 million Wicca 101 books out there.
Right.
And so, yeah.
And they don't use that. The people who are in, or that their faith and their belief system is Wicca, use that terminology and say, I'm Wiccan, not I'm a witch, because they're not looking for the shock factor of I'm a witch, you know, and seeing how people react to it, you know.
Yeah, you know, I think the pagan community is one of those communities that is so diverse and very eclectic. And I think, yeah, you have certain people that treat Wicca truly as a nature-based religion. And but then again, you're going to bring a lot of people to it. They're going to put spins on it. And by saying you're necessarily a witch or a Wiccan is kind of far away. If a witch is, you're right, it's a buzzword. It's something that's going to definitely get people to notice, and it's going to be like, whoa, that kind of a thing. But I have known many people that do utilize that word that aren't necessarily, like Lori Cabot up in Salem.
Right.
Now, she's the official witch of Salem, and she has done a lot for the community. She's very well-known. She's very well-liked. She's very positive. And but she proudly, I never forget the time I was up in Salem, and I was looking for her shop. And I was with a friend of mine, and we're looking around, and we're like a little lost, trying to find this thing. All of a sudden, we see this woman getting into this Hyundai, small car, and she had on this long, flowing black outfit and the hair and everything. And I'm talking to my friend, I'm like, gee, you know, I want to meet her, I want to find the store, whatever, whatever. She's like, you don't have to, she's right there. And I'm like, I was like, how do you know that? Well, that was stupid on my part, because she literally dressed the part, and she claimed to be, you know, the official witch of Salem and everything like that. And eventually, they get to speak to her, and she was a lovely lady. She was did a lot for the community, and it was it's. I think when we were talking about people about the atheist before, how do people become that? Is that I think we're very much culturally affected, and I think that religious belief and spirituality is very much part of either the herd mentality, or yes, or maybe then you're going to branch off and be, you know, nonconformist and go into other things. I think when you said before. That maybe with Wicca or witches might be an extreme away from prison. No, I think Satanism would be the
I don't think it's extreme. I was using that as an example of how some people will go into things as a shock factor for whatever reason, for the attention, or for the same thing. I could say that for the you know, where I'm going, like for Universal Life Church, for the online seminaries that ordain first and then teach second. Was that the belief is that you were allowed to be ordained. There was nothing precluding that. There wasn't a requirement, except by man, that you had to go to get your training first.
Right.
So they ordain you first, and then you can go for training at your own pace.
I think that was in the Bible. I think you can be.
Well, it actually is, but it depends on
how
it depends on what religion translates the Bible for you and how it's presented to you. Because a lot of things are in the Bible, too. But it's people will go around and do that. They'll get ordained and they'll walk around. Well, I'm a priest.
Oh, right.
I mean, it's the same. Right. Yes. They're doing it for the shock factor of the same way. So it's not just. It's more used for, you know, you have the dominant religions or the religions, I guess, that have the most followers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people don't go around saying I'm a Buddhist and expect that shock.
Right.
And all.
Right.
But what they say that, and it's not like they're saying they're wicked. If someone said they're wicked, most people are going to go, okay, what's that? Or they're going to understand what it is. But by saying the witch connotation is different than saying, you know.
It's making a statement.
Right.
I agree with you
100%. That's what I think. Like some of the atheists may be agnostics or skeptics or just disenfranchised from their religion or caught up in the whole bad experience with an organized religion. So that's their shock word.
I just one thing saying, you know,
atheist. I'm an atheist.
I don't really have a set belief system, something like that, and it sounds a little bit funny. You go, no, I'm atheist. You're right. That has more of like a presence. It has more of like a, you know, cut and dry kind of thing, and it does invite people to automatically try to either convert them or to whatever. So
it's an attention getter.
Who leaves that
alone?
Yeah.
If you meet an atheist, who leaves that alone? And goes, oh, okay. You can't.
You're like, what?
Exactly. You cannot leave that alone, no matter in any situation. You have to probe further and know more. And that's kind of, I think, is that what they want?
Is on the other end, they can leave it alone. They have no desire to learn why you believe in a higher power, I have found, in those that I know. And something else interesting about atheists, those who became atheists in their life, particularly after September 11th, believe, why would a God let that happen? So you do believe in God.
Right.
Because you're believing that he allowed it to happen.
Right. So it's anger at God.
You're mad.
So the,
Yeah, and I think there's
and you can't be angry at some being that you do not believe exists. So then you can't be an atheist.
And I think there's an old saying, they said there are no atheists in the foxhole.
Exactly. I like to use that a lot.
You like that one.
Well,
yeah.
It reminds me, reminds me of Constantine. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I don't believe in the devil. Well, you should, because he believes in you.
Oh, yeah, just said that. That should be a big, big disclaimer for anything when you talk about anything like this. It's like, yeah, just because you don't believe in something doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
And that's absolutely true. So, you know, I wanted to put that in there because, again, repeating that, when September 11th happened, I heard that left and right, that I'm atheist now. I don't believe in God. Why would God let that happen? And I'm like, what?
So that means they just never. That's just, again, it's people hurt, and they're and they need an explanation for why something bad has happened, but they also haven't looked beyond their own sphere of their life. Look at the Sudan, look at the genocides that have been happening for over a decade in Africa alone, where the tribes were killing each other on a daily basis as the African Union and as the United Nations watched and filmed, and was on your news for that 30-second little snippet, thousands killed tonight. How could God allow, we got the UK representative over here. how could you allow Christians? They believe the same exact things, pretty much, fundamentally, fight against and kill each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, Over what?
Well, look at the Holy Land. How much battle and war and
the Crusades,
Crusade, you know, I mean, it just goes so deep.
But God, if you want to follow literally, God called on the Crusades for the Christians to take back, because the Pope's the one who organized it. So he gets his orders from the boss. You know, that's the way. That's, you know, again, history is written by the people who win, So, but what true history is, we'll never know.
But many terroristic acts are done in the name of God.
Right.
And they truly believe what they're doing is what God is commanding.
I think I'm trying to. I'm really good for cliches tonight. Wait, I have no. This is important. I think it was Voltaire that said that God created man in his own image, and then man turned around and returned the favor. And I think that from what you just said is very convenient to say that, this is why do we do this? God said so.
God told me to do this.
God told me, hey, hey.
I didn't want to get in the whole thing. We could do a whole show. When in doubt, when you have nothing else to talk about and you're trying to, your guest doesn't, you can't connect to your guest, just go with religion.
Yeah.
And yes, it does relate to ghost hunting for those of you. If you guys are into paranormal and to ghost hunting and you don't understand how religion connects, maybe you need to open your mind a little bit more, because we're talking about, you can't talk about spirits without talking about spirituality. You can't understand spirituality without understanding more than just your own.
Right, and it's going to help you deal with again, if you go to people's homes and things like that, the families and people that are affected, it's going to help you have an understanding of what they might, you know, what their feelings are and how they work.
Particularly when the children are involved and the parents do not believe. Because that presents itself with a very interesting problem there. The kids are upset, you get called in, we need to know what this is. I mean, that's a delicate situation.
And, I have to go here because I've been waiting. Okay.
Is it the demon question?
No, this is something I've been going back and forth in my head. Granted, we need a whole show on this, and I want to get, so I want to get some other people involved, have like a nice large group of people. The Old Testament God, see, Michelle's father and grandfather were Jewish, not practicing, but, and she's touching, learning about the Jewish culture. She likes to read Seneca and Plato and people that, unless you're forced to read it for school, wouldn't read it. She reads it for enjoyment. So that just gives you a point of view. So I gave her the Talmud and the Midrash and all these, Jewish books to read. So she's now going through the Talmud, which is basically the Torah, and she's reading all the accounts. And she's stopping. She's asking me all these questions. And it's like we've gotten to the debate now. We're at the point of the Old Testament God does not seem like it's the same God in the New Testament. There are just too many things that do not jive, that are counter-opposed to each other. If we did like a board, a checklist of like, this is what he said in the Old Testament, this is what he says in the New Testament. They are polar opposites. Right. So,
Old Testament, what angry God.
Right. Now, if you, there are many ways to go with that, but there's one huge one. Obviously, when they put the Christian Bible together, they kept the Old Testament there. Mm-hmm. And one reason was to help the, bring the Jews over to help convert. That was the easiest way to do it. Incorporate their belief systems into it, too, and then it was easier to transition over.
Right.
But for the Gentiles who didn't believe in that, that must have been some sort of a issue. Because they were reading about this God that not only took the tribes of Israel to war and told them to kill other people, but also required them to kill animals because he liked the smell of the burning flesh on the altar, and had to have altars built by in certain sizes, shapes, and then tents built around certain areas where he would be, and no one else could go inside there. You know, there seemed like a lot of little extras that, like, a vain God, as opposed
to
God of... The love wasn't there in the Old Testament.
But do you think that maybe that inconsistency also could be a basis for many atheists' beliefs that they're confused?
Well, if you actually read and go through and just even scan it, I mean, just look at the basic stories you know from the Old Testament. Okay, and then think of what you know of the New Testament. They don't jive, and there's only one explanation for that. That to me, in my mind, and this is where I've come through. And I'm 2/3 of the way through the seminary now. I'm reading all these different religions and all the different enlightened paths and all this stuff. I was watching a show on Buddha last night. I mean, so it's a whole big mishmash in my head. But either the God of the Old Testament, and New Testament are not the same God, which Ancient Aliens actually was talking about on one episode.
Yes, they say
they're two different gods.
Yeah.
Now, while that might be a valid theory, I'm leaning towards the fact that maybe God learned or changed his mind. He never claims ever to be omnipotent and all-powerful and where he can't commit anything wrong. Even, like, say Genesis. On the first day he created blah, 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 saw it was good. Second day, saw it was good. Saw it was good. Through the 6 days. He saw everything was good. This is God. He didn't say he saw it was, like, great. He didn't have, like, two thumbs up and, like, you know. He didn't say it was perfect. He said it was good. Good is our measuring line for average. Every translation of the Bible is always used the word for good. These are supposed to be God's words. He just saw it was good. I mean, he didn't throw out a great world. He didn't make everything great. He just made it just good. So that shows that there's a learning curve there. That he maybe saw that, you know, that, like, you get more flies with, you know, sugar than maybe drowning everybody in fire and brimstone down on entire cities, and people still weren't learning the lesson. Maybe he decided to go and try
the softer side of
season. Exactly, the compassionate side. Exactly. Tough love wasn't working because we're, you know.
Well, there's two things here, too. I mean, first of all, we all know that the Bible, although written by the hand of God through man, was still written by man. And as a woman, I will attest to the fact that, yeah, it was written by men. However, also another thing to just open up our minds even more is, would it be possible that what we consider the God of the New Testament and the God of the Old Testament are indeed the highest power? Maybe there's something higher.
Or back to aliens even.
Well, that's the Old Testament, Ten Commandments, thou shalt have no other God before me, which opens up the line behind them completely. Mm-hmm. This guy wants to be first, which is acknowledgement that there are others. Mm-hmm. And there's other things in the earliest translation, like Elohim, is the gods, it's plural. Mm-hmm. Now that's why they use plural, and even talking, we let us make man and women in our image, our image.
And is God simply what is being referred to as the highest power? Is there another name for something higher? You know, okay, there should be no God before me. There is something other above me, but it's not God.
And this is where people get, I'm not confusing, I think they get a little crazy and nutty or run away because there's no easy answer.
Uh-uh.
They can't accept that obviously man tampered with the words. Whether it was intentional, yes, it was intentional too, or unintentional, yes, because if you've taken any language in high school or elementary school, any language, you can see there's no literal translation for some phrases. You run in, and if the literal translation, if you do the literal translation, you change the meaning of what's being said completely. So we're talking about that dead languages that we're trying to translate over. It's, we're obviously, something's lost in the translation. It has to be, just by its nature. So there's stuff that we don't understand. Even this, when I was watching the show about Buddha, Buddha predates Christ by 500 years. And for the first, I think it was almost the first 400 or so, there was no written record of it. It was all verbal. It was all, and that people will cry about the New Testament being, oh my God, you know, it was, there was at least written, wasn't written down until 30 years after Christ was crucified. It's like, well, what about not writing down for 400 years? And the Jewish, the Midrash, a lot of the oral traditions that are in the Jewish tradition that aren't in the Torah, because the Torah is the books of Moses. These are other oral traditions that are considered holy and sacred. Even Islam, you have you have the main holy books, but you have the books that were written by Muhammad as well, that were like addendums, his writings and his sayings, that are also referred to as in just as high esteem as what's written in the Quran. Because sometimes when you see quotes, you'll see quotes taken from different books, and if you're not, you know, Islamic scholar or a Muslim, a Muslim knows where they're coming from. Same thing if I see a quote at Michelle's, I'd see what book she's looking at. So I don't know if she's reading it from what she has in the Torah or the Midrash. You know, I need to know exactly, because then it gives me an idea of the basis of where it comes from. Just like the Christians have the Apocrypha and all the other, the Dead Sea Scrolls and the you know, Nag Hammadi Library, all these other books we're finding now that all seem to date back to the same time the New Testament was, that suddenly someone decided, oh, you don't fit. That's, yeah.
you see, I kind of got on this concept, although my recent religious background has been more steered towards the pantheist kind of realm, so being kind of, that's been my room for the past 7 years. I've kind of seen God as being almost an embodiment of the state of man at any given time. And God can only be as good as we can let God be at any given time collectively as mankind. Which is why, you know, kind of going back to your discussion earlier on of Old Testament versus New Testament. Old Testament, man was very base, and had a lot of learning to go through. And that was where man was at. He was at that very angry, immature stage. And as man developed, you then moved into the New Testament phase where man was much more enlightened. And so he was a lot more easygoing. He was a lot more forgiving. He was a lot more charitable. There was a lot less anger there. That's kind of where I see it, which I think when we come back to the question of atheists, kind of brings into that whole point of people who can't externalize any of these things. They can't possibly relate how we are or how they are to that external thing. So it's all got to be internal. So it's about the I cut off. There can be nothing higher.
And then to bring that, you know, does that mean that the higher power dismisses atheists? No. Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. It's simply that that is how they function.
Not until the last person on the earth becomes an atheist, and everybody is atheist. But even then, it doesn't mean that God's going to disappear. Again, God is only ever going to be as good, and he will still remain good, but he'll only ever be as good as we let him be.
Kind of like the sales manager.
Kind of like the sales manager, yeah. Because it's
that throws an interesting theory altogether. It's whatever divine being. Because now I'm into mystical Christianity. So I'm learning about to be whole, a whole person, a whole being, you have to have a masculine and feminine side. So why wouldn't, and because God, if you get down here, read carefully, there's a lot of dualism that is still left in the Bible, but obviously it looks like some people try to change some words and take that out. That's why I think you see Elohim and let us make man and women in our image. Well, if God's made man in our image, and he makes women in our image, it doesn't, I mean, any 4 or 5 year old can tell you something's different. Okay? So they can't both be in our image, or can they? Right. The whole thing with the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, and was she, that everyone got caught up in the whole, what's the book?
The Last Temptation of Christ.
No, the Dan Brown book.
Da
Vinci Code. Everyone got caught up in maybe Jesus and her had a baby, maybe they were married. What about maybe if they were the yin yang of, they were the duo, they were the teachers, both of them. Because there's no, they didn't name women after their location where they lived in those days. And there is no Magdalene. There's a Magdala, a town. So they assume she was from there, even though there's no record of her being around there. Okay? But if you translate the Magdalene and go back to some early translations from the Greek, you could translate it in as the tower is one of them. And as teacher, as another. So Jesus is the one that refers, if by the words in the New Testament, he's the one that refers to her as Mary Magdalene. Not Mary of Magdalene, Mary Magdalene. Mary the teacher or Mary the tower. And in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, she is the apostle of the apostles. She is the one who knew the other half. Jesus even said he was going to leave, someone was going to come after him. And maybe she was the one, but the man, you know, male-based society, kind of, that's one of the books they wrote out and drummed out. And,
no way.
You know. As a matter of fact, that didn't really happen until 400 or 500 years later, where really females were made second-class citizens in the Christian church. In the early Christian church, they were not. They were equals. It became, when it became more of what's become now like the what the Roman Catholicism is. The male-dominated, strict, you know, male-only, the priests have to be men, all that. That's where things came from. But it came from, again, out of a political motivation, not out of...
Well, we can take this a step further beyond Christianity, again, into other forms of beliefs with animals as teachers, with nature as teacher, the storms themselves teaching us something, the earth itself teaching us, developing messages. So, you know, if you want to continue to expand your mind, that every single thing on this planet is made in our sales manager's image, to put it, you know, pretty simply. You can see where organized religion begins to segment beliefs of exactly who or what God is. But when we're trying to quantify something, we cannot possibly quantify.
That's why when I do the, like, in the one book I have, The Positive Energy for Haunted Homes, it's kind of how we started teaching some of the techniques for psychic protection, which throws people a little loop anyway, or, you know, little people get freaked out. Psychic protection, what do you mean? You know, is that, again, that bad things could pop in their head. But when they, when you realize, okay, because I had a problem, let's use crystals, for example. I had a problem at first using crystals, because I thought, okay, well, it's kind of, it seems awful pagan to me. It's like, I'm sure I'm going to burn in hell for that if I carry some crystals around. Because, you know, that's exactly what I would have been told growing up. So it was kind of like what I was taught. It's like something, why would I use that? You know, but yet I'll wear a piece of metal with a, you know, a pretty much just a dead body now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be my symbol. But that didn't mortify me or say, hey, that's a bad thing.
But yet, most rosaries, a lot of rosaries are made out of humans.
Right. But I looked at it this way. This is what finally opened my eyes about the crystals. I was thinking Native American, with the and we know that the medicines they derive from the plants were real. We use them now. Some homeopathic, some in real medicines. We know that the plants have certain, what you would call powers, or whatever, they do stuff. If you're the divine being, whoever you decide the divine being may be, or divine beings, why did you take the time, was it just for, you know, fun that day? You decided, I know what I'm going to do today. I'm just going to make a whole bunch of different kinds of crystals and minerals just for absolutely no reason at all. That's really going to screw them up. That makes absolutely no sense.
I think in the Bible it does say that everything you need to heal is on this planet. I don't know the exact
It pretty much says everything you need
is
here for you. So why make all these different crystals, which we know vibrate at different vibrations, at different frequencies, things like that? Why do that if it was for no purpose? So when I started thinking like that, okay, if God took the time to actually make all these, maybe they do actually do what people say, so it can't hurt to like try it out. And I found out, like, okay, well, like, some of them do work for me the way that people say. So that I guess I'm not a Satanist or a witch now because I'm wearing crystals on my hand. Because that's exactly how I would have looked at things before.
Yep.
I would have looked at things. I looked at all that stuff when I first, I mean, even my first like 10 years of doing this, I call this like the hocus pocus mumbo jumbo stuff of paranormal. I would never imagine that I'd be like in the other room, we got all the incense, the crystals, all that other stuff, the evil eye, you know, all that. I would have never, ever dreamt of being any place that I even had them in them, let alone selling them or wearing them or using them, because it conflicted with how I was programmed with by my faith. But instead of rejecting it, becoming, I am not into organized religion, I understood what organized religion was, and that's a label was slapped on. I can step outside the box, keep my belief system, and still work with all the others because they don't oppose each other. None of them oppose each other.
No, I think, you know, I think spirituality is one of those things. It's a journey, and it's a process. And I think if you're open to wherever that's going to take you, you can look back and say, yeah, you know, we can all see how we evolved. You know, it's amazing to step back and say, wow, you know, 10 years ago, I never would have thought this or believed that. And I think it's a beautiful process. And if you're open to it, I think we all are on a path, whether we choose to be a part of it actively or not. I think we still are on it. But again, we have that free will that you were talking about before. I think that's built into the whole system. I think the higher power, you know, like you said.
Yes, that is thunder in the background.
Yeah, see, he agrees. And
we're on the right path.
Yeah, there you go.
So it gets struck by lightning, then we know.
Yeah, then we know that's a, yeah, that's great. I definitely, I was just talking to someone tonight, actually, about this, on how a lot of people think that, you know, they when they're on their spiritual path, that they can get influenced. There's a lot of people, yeah, are going to try to tell you, no, don't believe this, do that, do this. And I think the key thing is to remain open. And I think nothing happens by chance. I think everything has a reason as to why it happens. And even scientifically, the proof, what's that, the butterfly effect?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, they talk about that. You can't even have a wings of a butterfly make movement. And it can't not. It just affects the whole world.
Well, that's why when I used to tell people when people come in, you know, you've heard this too, I'm sure. If you guys haven't said it to me. I know Kim said it to me at least once, I think, a while back. But, like, people feel like they don't have it. I don't have a special gift. Everyone else seems to have this gift in the group or a special ability. And I don't seem to have this ability, so I don't see what I bring to the group. I don't see what I bring. And it's, you take the tiniest pebble and you throw it in the ocean. You've raised the ocean's level across the world.
Right.
It may not be something that's measurable by, you know, a rule where you're not going to stick in there and see the difference. But you have changed the entire world by throwing up stone into the ocean.
Yeah.
The butterfly effect. Everything affects anything. So when people look at even the bad stuff, God said it was good in the, you know, for the Christian point of view. Buddha taught it, everything was, it was misery and everything. You were looking for the way out, to find the bliss. Life was the misery. You were supposed to, that's what you were supposed to learn from.
Well, from contrast, right. I think humans as a whole learn from contrast. If you didn't have cold, you wouldn't know what hot is. So I think in order to have that life of misery and whatever, but I think Buddha also realized that through horrendous things that happens in one life comes great growth. And unless I think it's the hardest thing. We talked before about people being bitter about like 9/11 and things that mm-hmm. happen, and they wonder why, people that they lose to you know, catastrophic illness and stuff. Why did this happen? And I think that for us to actually be able to know all the variables there is impossible, because nobody's going to know how that, let's say one person that passed away young, nobody's going to know how many lives that person touched and how they touched that person. And I can tell you, I have a little story that I read one time which blew me away. there was this a teenager in high school, and he went to class. He was kind of depressed and stuff like that, and he had a teacher that was a good friend of his, and they kind of bonded and stuff like that, and then you know, one day, you know, the teenager stopped coming to class, and the teacher got very concerned, and everything. So she kind of got more involved with family and everything like that, and so eventually it just kind of spiraled out where they became closer and closer connected, and so basically it turns out that the teacher was having his own issues with depression issues, and he was actually on the verge of suicide. And before he actually started getting involved with this other team who had similar issues, and they bonded together, it actually, they pulled each other out. They're really down, their dark space, you know. And it's like, and but the strange thing is, though, neither one of them really knew, do you know what I'm saying, like, the, about the other person. So it's like, it was a shocking thing, because he said to the teacher, what do you mean you were like that? You had that problem, too, and all these other things. And it's like, and if either one of them choose to leave this plane at that point, they never would have known how much good they did for the other one. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting on how, and that's a severe type of scenario. But, I mean, I think that a lot of times, even from our casual interactions with people and this and that, and I've seen it time and time again with spirits where it's like, well, let's say I'm doing a mediumship reading for someone, and they'll be sitting in, I do these group things. Somebody will sit there fully prepared to hear from, like, their mom, their dad, somebody close to them. And then somebody will come through that they've worked with 10 years ago, and they didn't really have much of a or whatever, but it will come out that they might have actually been there for that person for a short time, or they might have done something for that person. It really meant a lot to them, but they never knew how much, you know. But yet the person will come through and say, you know what, I really appreciate, you know, that you took care of my wife when I was in the hospital and this happened and that happened. And people will be blown away thinking, well, gee, you know, I didn't realize, you know, that I really made a big difference, or I didn't realize that really touched them that way. And that kind of stuff happens all the time.
But it's, it's comforting to think that, you know, there's, you know, good's going to come out of the bad. I mean, it doesn't help mitigate the pain
right.
of any of the events that people suffer. But, you know, I guess...
The pain is part of life. Literally, the pain is just as much of a gift as
it takes the
happiness.
Right, because you have to, right, like you said, there has to be the contrast.
Yeah.
There has to be the yin to the yang.
Yeah, and I think it's just part of the cycle.
Exactly.
And if you read any of the other, you know, spiritualists and the ones who believe in reincarnation and tapping into the higher consciousness and those that, you know, what they don't call God, they call the masters that are even above God. You know, and there's many of them. There's not one master. It's several masters. And the way they, you know, you read into it, it's everyone will eventually become a master. It can take, you know, however many lives it takes you, whatever your cycle is supposed to be, you know, but you're, you know, people who tap into that higher conscious, supposed to, you know, bring the light of God or call it what you will, that power down to you, is supposed to help get you through this cycle of life and put you in wherever it is you need to be in the next cycle of life. You know, and Buddha talks about that, but we could date that back to pre-Hindu civilization. You know, Indus Valley, not even Hindu, Indus Valley civilization, believed all the same thing.
Jesus didn't discount reincarnation either.
No.
The Christians wrote that out and removed most of the things to that, where he was talking about when he said the kingdom of God is at hand, and they were all looking around like,
uh-oh.
Like where's your, they were looking like where, you know, where is it, where's the, where's your army? Where's everything else? It's inside us. We have that already. It's that recognizing the inner being, letting that light grow and become stronger and stronger.
And tapping into that
right.
power. Everyone, like you just said, has that ability. And we say, you know, what you just said to Kim before about, you always get the question of, I don't think I have that special ability. I don't think I have that, you know, I'm not psychic. I can't hear. We all have that. It's how deep you can look within yourself, if you can handle looking within yourself to access that stuff in order to reach those higher planes and higher.
Oh, that's right. Gina, by the way. She walked in late. So I didn't say she was here. So.
And I think, too, I think intention is key. I mean, even, you know, all people say that and stuff like that, but even if they go to a case and they're just there and their desire is to just help out and to do what they can, that right there is golden,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, it seems basic, but it's really not, though. I mean, everybody together, it's a team effort.
Right, you know, whether you're just being there to support your teammates or support the people in the house, if that's what you're, it's the intent. Mm-hmm. I mean, intent is everything with your beliefs and everything.
But, you know, how do you explain all this to an atheist?
You just keep talking at them until they, like, their eyes cross and their head explodes.
Well, like with your aunt, though, she had the Native American beliefs.
And dismissed that as being any kind of a higher power belief. It was an interesting.
See, that's someone who's using the label atheist, mm-hmm. either because it's a way to stab back at whatever the pain is that she got from, or she sees wrong done to her from God, or she's just using the wrong word.
But isn't atheist is where that person is at that time in their, for want of a better phrase, their own spiritual growth, their own spiritual path through. Whether it's this life, and it's something has got to happen on that path that they need to learn.
But are they wrong?
To move.
Who are we to say they're wrong?
But they're not wrong at that time because that's where they're at.
Right, still not our beliefs change and grow. If you still have the same beliefs you did when you were, you know, whenever you became aware of your belief system, whether it was like as a child or as a young adult, we're all in our 40s, right? Okay. I'm taking a stab out there. I didn't want to get any bad looks. So we're all in our 40s here, and if we still have the same belief system as when we had it when we were like 12,
mm-hmm.
then we're doing something wrong.
Correct.
Because we shouldn't be. And we probably shouldn't have the same belief system exactly as we did when we were 20 or 30. It changes as life experience changes. You grow. When you stop growing, that's when you've reached the end of the road, I think. That's when you become stagnant and then you've locked yourself away in a box, and that's when you're probably destined to repeat all over again because you didn't get the maximum of what you could get out of this life anyway.
Right. The very reason why you're here is because you still have stuff to learn.
And you're choosing to be here, too. Exactly. I mean, right. I think a lot of times people just, sure, you can shut yourself down and you can isolate yourself, but I think I feel bad for people like that because it is a very, they're an island, and they think, the odd thing is they think they're cutting themselves off from their higher power, this or that, but you really can't, you know what I mean? It's just, you're just choosing to kind of just shut down, but I don't think, I personally believe, is my personal belief, is that they never forget, you might turn your back on them, but they never turn your back on you, and I believe that, and I think that they'll always, and even on spirits that I've encountered, on cases that are earthbound spirits, and let's say they're stuck there because of fear, they're afraid to move on, they're afraid of whatever, periodically, their angels, their guides, their loved ones will come back and say, how about now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how about now? And they're not going to give up, and they're not going to stay earthbound forever. You know, I think a perfect example to what you're talking about before, or near-death experiences, I mean, there's been many people that have been staunch atheists, and staunch, you know, really nasty people, too. I saw this one guy that, I forgot how he died or whatever, but he had a near-death experience, and it just changed his life completely. So you were saying before, just because they're like that, I mean, it just, yeah. Something
doesn't mean
just,
they're going to be like that
exactly,
permanently. Right?
Exactly, and sometimes the universe will just get into, you know.
The phase of learning.
Yeah, it doesn't preclude
their progress.
Right.
Right.
And we're going to have to leave it there, and hopefully next week we're going to have a light show about what to think of something really, really like the chupacabra or something. What to talk about something that, because we're just going deep and down the religious road again. I'm sure some people.
It's an amazing topic.
Some people turn it off because they don't believe how it relates to the paranormal. But hopefully, we're changing that view. And there is a show after us now, so I have to get off the air and ready for them to go. So until next week, we will see you on our podcast. I guess so. Make sure you download that too.